Welcome to the latest edition of the podcast to be named later. My name is Sean Coleman. Hope wherever you are and wherever you're listening, everything is going well on your end. And I once again am filling in for our fearless leader here at Battery Power, Chris Willis. Chris is getting a lot of things out of the way on his end for another exciting baseball season. So he will be back with Stephen Tolbert here next week. But of course, that means Stephen Tolbert is here with us this week. Stephen, again, it's always a pleasure to talk with you. I always enjoy, you know, hearing the perspectives of you and Chris. It's fun to jump in anytime I can to talk with you and talk some Braves baseball.
Yeah, what's up, Sean? It's good to have you on again, buddy. We appreciate it, you jumping in again. But yeah, we had some big news drop right at the beginning of the week. We'll talk about first, and then, you know, we've got some interesting things happening in camp. Some guys who are playing well, some guys who are struggling. You know, it's always an interesting dynamic and dilemma of how much that stuff matters. I've kind of always been on the record that it matters more for some than others relative to your, you know, your certainty in terms of your roster spot. But yeah, we got a lot to get to. So we appreciate you hopping on with us, buddy.
Always a pleasure, man. Anytime I can talk baseball with some of the best that cover it in Braves country, that's always a fun time for me. But Stephen, you kind of alluded to it. Let's jump right into it. Of course, I talked about it on the Daily Hammer. I know that Brad and Scott talked about it over the weekend when it came to Ronald Acuña Jr. on Tuesday morning. The good news was revealed that after there being, you know, irritation in his meniscus and the same knee that a few years ago he had his ACL constructed, he went to the doctor on the same doctor that did his ACL surgery in the past, went to that doctor on Monday. It was released on Tuesday that, hey, that's all it is irritation. He should be able to ramp up and be good for opening day. That's the good news. That is amazing news, great news. It already seems like he's doing some baseball activity. But Stephen, I feel wrong if I didn't just have a bit of a, you know, feeling about the main thing now for the Braves is ensuring that while it's minor now, they certainly want to make sure that not only does it not get into something bigger than it is now, but my main concern is hoping that this doesn't pop up again. It's overall great news, but you just hope that they're taking an approach that will, you know, get it taken care of now to where it won't be something that will linger or potentially be a risk for popping up again after the season starts.
Yeah, I'm going to be interested to see what they do. You know, last year, he really had no restrictions. I mean, he ran more than he ever ran before the ACL injury. Obviously, to steal that many bases in one season, he basically always had a green light. And, you know, he never really had anything like this happen last year where, you know, he had a little scare. And it's obviously really good news that that's all it was just some inflammation and there's nothing structurally wrong with the knee. And, you know, when it happened, I was kind of preparing myself for every eventuality. I was kind of preparing myself for the worst case scenario and the best case scenario and everything in between. And, you know, I think this is probably close to the best case scenario where he's, at least as they see it now, he's not going to miss any regular season time. But yeah, I am going to be interested to see how, you know, something like this maybe changes their approach or his approach or, you know, his aggressiveness. How much is he going to run? You know, how much is he going to play? Are they going to give him days off? Are they going to let him DH a couple of days? I'll be interested to see if this changes anything. Because last year, I mean, we had a whole sample of it last year where, again, he, you know, he played right field basically every day. He was full go from, you know, opening day till the last day of the season. And that really never stopped. And obviously he won the MVP because of it. So yeah, really good news, obviously, that he's not going to miss any time. But to your point, you know, what do they adjust? Do they adjust anything? You know, is he going to be limited in some way? Or are they going to, you know, take it slow with him? I think that's still to be seen. And obviously we need to see him actually get back on the field and ramp back up and start playing in games, and like all that is still ahead of us. So, you know, you still want to kind of be cautiously optimistic, but definitely good news. It could have been substantially worse news. That's for sure.
Well, and Stephen, I'll go further on this because when it comes to Ronald Acuña Jr., you know, last year was absolutely amazing. And of course, it coming after that ACL injury in 2022, he had struggled a bit because he was trying to work his way back from the injury. But, you know, I'm a full believer that When it comes to your biggest stars, doing whatever you can to allow for them to be the best version of themselves is what needs to be done for them to be those stars. And the best version of Ronald Acuña Jr. is him going 150% nonstop. That's just who he is. That's the type of vibrant, passionate personality that he is. And it's wonderful for the Braves, for the sport of baseball, and so on. But you also kind of want to, in this situation, I don't necessarily say you want to kind of limit that, but you just want to make sure that his utilization, how much he's playing, things like that. It is something that you've got to work with because you want to make sure that he is, as fully healthy as possible. So just kind of managing that. I'm not saying it's necessarily a chore or anything like that, but with the type of personality, with the type of approach that Ronald Acuña Jr. has, you want to make sure that you're cautious with it so he doesn't put himself in a position to potentially risk an injury again.
Well, and one thing about Ronald that I've always noticed, and this is even going back to his rookie year, Ronald's kind of got like a little bit of a, herky jerky way of running. Like it's not the smoothest gait you've ever seen. Like there's been a bunch of times. There was that one in his rookie year where, he was running to first base, he hit the first base bag weird. Everybody thought he tore up his knee, right then and there, and he ended up missing a month. But, people thought it was going to be worse than that. And he's always kind of had, you have guys who run really smoothly, and then you have guys who run kind of chaotically. And Ronald is definitely on the other, he's on the chaotic end of the spectrum. It's just never been the smoothest. And so, he's always going to be, I mean, the truth is, he's just always going to be susceptible to these kind of injuries where his knee kind of gets out of position while he's taking a big step. And, I think this is just going to kind of be something he always has to deal with. Guys who run really smooth, everything really flows well, they don't necessarily deal with this as much. But Ronald's always just kind of had that, free flowing kind of chaotic running style. And, it's just, I think it, like you said, he's not going to be less aggressive. And so I think this is just going to be kind of something we always kind of have to worry about, to be honest. I would not be surprised if he had another knee injury at some point in his career, just the way he runs and as full bore as he goes all the time. But yeah, you just hope it's minor. You hope you can manage it best you can, and obviously limit the amount of time that he misses.
Absolutely. And so, great news. Obviously the Braves know more than anyone how to ensure, the best possibility of it not occurring again. And so hopefully we'll see Ronald, maybe, few and far between when he's on the diamond with for the rest of spring training. But the main point is him being 100% healthy on opening day, not only obviously to defend, his MVP, being the reigning MVP that he is, but also doing what he can to help the Braves win a World Series. But let's talk about, on the field, Stephen, and the biggest takeaway for me is the fact that so far, I won't necessarily say it's best case scenario, but when you look at the overall production of the pitching staff, not just the starters, not just certain, not just your best starters, but I'm talking about your aces, your veteran pieces, your young pieces, both in the starting rotation and the bullpen, Stephen, our pitching has looked impressive. Start or game in and game out. I didn't check as of today, but earlier this week, leading the majors in K rate. Me and you talked about that the last time we spoke. The Braves had really focused on wanting to add the ability to consistently get strikeouts, and especially in playoff scenarios. Bryce Elder, who was one of the more glaring, slow starts to the spring, he had a really good outing today after he gave up that initial home run. But I come away very impressed with this pitching, and I think it's a great thing, especially when you consider the fact that everybody seems to be healthy, but also everybody seems to be really effective right now going through the early part of spring training.
Well, yeah, and that's the big thing right now is that Chris Sale is healthy, Max Fried is healthy, Charlie Morton's healthy, all the bullpen pieces are healthy, everybody looks good, everybody's got, really good velocity. Ronaldo Lopez has looked nasty all spring. Chris Sale has looked nasty all spring. Spencer Strider has looked nasty. A bunch of the bullpen pieces have looked really, really good. I mean, yeah, I mean, I would say probably overarching outside of the Acuña injury. Stole all the headlines for a little bit. The biggest story so far this spring, I would say, is how good the pitching has looked and how healthy the pitching has stayed to this point. Oscar Yanoa had a little bit of a soreness thing that they backed off him, but even that they said was pretty minor. Other than that, they really haven't had anything. And I hate saying that into a microphone because I'm not a superstitious person, but like when you talk about baseball injuries and especially pitching injuries, you just don't want to be too, you don't ever want to be too confident about it. But so far, up to this point, about, not probably almost halfway through spring, not quite halfway through spring, it's been best case scenario in terms of health and in terms of how all the guys have looked. If they can get this group to the regular season in the same form, then I'll take my chances. I think they have, I said this, I think the last time you and I talked, but I think they have the potential to be the best pitching staff in all of baseball between, how dominant the bullpen can be. Five really good starters, really, if it's regardless of if it's Ronaldo or Elder, they have, Elder has at least got major league experience and has had major league success. And honestly, for your number five starter, there's a lot of teams that can't say that. So, yeah, if they can get this group to the regular season as healthy as it's been and in this kind of form that they've been in early in spring, that would just be a massive, massive win, so early in the season.
Absolutely. And one of the things that, definitely stands out is that we know the first four in the rotation, Spencer Strider, Max Fried, in some form, one or two, Charlie Morton, Chris Sale, in those first four spots. And I know a few weeks ago we talked about that fifth starter spot, but we've now seen, the most obvious candidates for that spot have a few starts between them. And it's just clear right now, Ronaldo Lopez is the best person for that role. He's looked the best, in my opinion. The preference for them, obviously, being a veteran and the Braves wanting to stretch him out, he seems to be the guy that would fit into that starting role. But, A.G. Smith-Shawver has looked good. And Bryce Elder, despite the fact that he struggled in his first two starts, he looked good today or on Thursday. So considering, we'll assume that Ronaldo Lopez is that fifth starter, where does that leave Bryce Elder for you? Steven, I think you could even say that, if he were to continue to struggle, if today were to be his best start, he were to struggle over his next few starts, his chance of making the opening day roster may even be in jeopardy. But I do feel that his ability to kind of effortlessly throw, five or so innings and at least keep this offense in the ball game more times than not when he's out there, that's valuable for 150, 175 plus innings in the regular season with some of the other pieces we're wanting to keep fresh for the playoffs. So yeah, he may not get the fifth starter role, but I think that he definitely is still valuable to this team when it comes to the regular season. Or do you think he may even be expendable? What's your approach with Bryce Elder if it seems pretty clear that he's not going to win that fifth starter spot?
Well, the big thing is he has options. So you can send him to Gwinnett and he can just pitch in Gwinnett for as long as you want him to. You can call him up. They're basically never does a team get through a season pitching five, starting five guys. And in fact, most of the time it's closer to double that, 10, 11, 12 guys is usually how many it takes to get through a whole season in terms of guys that make starts for you at some point. So, my guess is if he's not on the opening day roster, he'll just get optioned to Gwinnett. He'll be, one of the five guys in Gwinnett. They'll definitely want to keep him close because I do think he's, unless AJ Smith-Shawver, I do want to say this into a microphone. I think AJ Smith-Shawver is, I don't want to say he's currently the sixth starter because I think it's still Bryce, but I think AJ is much closer than maybe people realize to being like the next guy in line. Because he's looked nasty. He's looked absolutely nasty in spring. I mean, his velocity is up. He's got really good break on his breaking balls. He's getting a lot of swings and miss. His command has been good. Like he's looked really good. Now you don't want to overreact to spring, obviously, but just on potential, obviously AJ Smith-Shawver's got way more potential than Bryce Elder just because of the stuff. I mean, he's just it's just a different level of pitching prospect. But I think as we sit here today, Elder's still the sixth starter, which means they're going to use him a lot. They're going to give Chris Sale plenty of days of rest. They're going to give Max Fried, Charlie Morton, all these guys, even Ronaldo Lopez, who hasn't been a starter in 3 years. They're probably not going to throw him 180 innings when he hasn't done that in so long. This is a guy they have $30 million invested in. So, and most of that is backloaded, right? So he gets more, way more expensive year two and year three. So they're not just going to blow up his arm in year one. Like, they're going to be very conservative with Ronaldo Lopez. It's probably not something we've talked about enough, but Lopez is a guy who I doubt very seriously they're going to let him throw more than 120, 130, maybe 150 at the most. But they got to ease him back into being a full-time starter. So even if he wins the job, Elder's going to get starts in that role, or whoever. But I do think Bryce is going to still play a pretty significant role in this team. I do think he could be expendable if the younger guys really come along. If it's clear that AJ and Hurston Waldrop and even guys like Allen Winans or Darius Vines, if it's clear those guys can handle being like the next best pitchers, down in Gwinnett, I can see a scenario where Elder is expendable if somebody really needs pitching. But right now, I think he's just going to be in Gwinnett and he'll be the sixth starter and he'll get used quite a bit.
And I think that you hit the nail on the head, kind of, changing course here just for a minute. It has been amazing to see Chris Sale and Ronaldo Lopez, two veteran sources who are, one you're trying to stretch out to be a starter, one you're hoping, will be healthy for the first time in a while. But I'm right there with you. What you said right there about Ronaldo Lopez, someone that you're going to have to stretch out, but you're going to have to be cautious with. You're not wanting him to probably throw more than 120 to 130 innings. My thing with that is that I don't want to see Ronaldo Lopez and Chris Sale making 25 plus starts, throwing 6 innings a night. And the reason why that is because to me, the signing of Lopez and the signing of Chris Sale were the for the Braves to be able to, after their two aces in Freed and Spencer Strider, for them to have Chris Sale from the left side and Ronaldo Lopez from the right side as multiple inning options that can work through opposing playoff lineups. They could work through the order a full time or two, multiple times in a playoff series. That, to me, is the focus of adding those two arms to this pitching staff for now and years to come. And the way that you do that is by keeping them fresh. Is that too focused of an approach? Is that getting ahead of yourself too much? Do you kind of share that feeling when it comes to what the ultimate utilization is or the best utilization is of Ronaldo Lopez and Chris Sale?
No, I think that's 100% correct. And if for no other reason, it's because, when you're pitching in the regular season, your offense is probably going to give you 5, 6 runs a game. Like, that's how good the Braves offense is. They're probably going to score on average. Like, once we get to the end of the year and we look back on the numbers, they're probably going to score between 5.5 and 6 runs a game. Right. So you can pitch a couple of, you can pitch exponentially worse in the regular season and still win a lot of games than you can pitch in the postseason and win. Because in the postseason, the Braves offense is not going to average 5.5 runs a game. The pitching is too good. You're going to average like 3 or 4 runs a game, which means your pitching has to be substantially better. So absolutely, like, their entire focus is going to be get these guys to October. Obviously, because it increases your chances of winning when you have, better pitching in October, but also because your offense is going to take a step back in October. Every offense takes a step back in October. And so you're going to have to, you're going to play more, you're going to have a pitching staff that can keep you in games, if your offense only scores 3 runs. And that's not going to be a problem really in the regular season because teams just can't optimize their pitching staffs against you in the regular season like they can in the postseason. So yeah, you're going to play to your strengths in the regular season, which is your offense, which means the pitching doesn't have to be elite. And that's when you can use Bryce Elder and you can use Allen Winans and you can use AJ Smith-Shawver and you can try to keep all your guys fresh because once you get to October, you don't have that luxury, right? The offense isn't going to score 6 runs a game in October. They're going to score like 3 or 4 runs a game, which means the pitching has to be substantially better. And so yeah, absolutely. That's where the focus has to be.
Yeah, and so and if you can keep that, whoo, going into this October with Freed and Strider, but also Lopez and Chris Sale, man, and with our bullpen, whoo, that would be a great pitching staff to enter it with. But we've talked about the pitching, and I like how you say it. You say it quite a bit when you're about to make a good point. You say you want to say into a microphone, and I'm going to give you credit. You said into a microphone a few weeks ago, Stephen, that you look at Michael Harris the second. And you look at, what he's shown at the plate early in his career with the defense that he can provide. You have someone that if he puts it together, just like puts it all together in a season at some point in the future, you potentially have a top 10 MVP candidate. And I'm here to tell you, he is locked in so far this spring. I'm not saying that he's on the verge of being that top 10 MVP candidate, but he looks like that he is locked in to take a step forward. You don't want to put, too much significance on spring training performance, but I definitely feel as if Michael Harris II could be on the verge of a breakout. I know we discussed the same thing a few weeks ago, but we're seeing him have this excellent spring. It really seems like he could be locked in. And if you could add him to this lineup on top of everybody else that we have, it would just be a wonderful thing. Your thoughts on his spring and just how much more validity that adds to him really having that star breakout year.
Yeah, he's hitting the ball in the air quite a bit in spring, which is, it's always been the thing with him is, he gets in these, I call it the endurance-iarte, right? The rollover to second, like itis, where he gets heavy ground ball. He goes through these kind of 25 game, 30 game stretches where he runs a 70, 75, 80% ground ball rate. And I don't care who you are, I don't care how hard you hit the ball. Unless you're Ronald Acuña Jr., basically, unless you're hitting the ball so freaking hard, it doesn't matter. But, there's nobody else like that on the planet. So, when you go through those stretches of hitting the ball on the ground so much, it just kills your offensive production. And he's been hitting the ball in the spring. He does hit the ball really hard. He's got some legitimate like 30, 35, 40 home run level pop. Like he's got some power in that bat. And we've seen this spring. I mean, he's not hitting wall scrapers. He's hitting balls, 400, 420, 430 feet. And it's poolside, which is encouraging because, most homers come poolside, especially if you get it in the air. And, that's if he can do that, if he can get poolside, balls in the air, he's gonna set a career high in home runs. And that's just kind of, you don't want to oversimplify it, but that's, I mean, if you look up at the end of the season, he's got his highest fly ball rate of his career. And he's pulling the ball at the rate that he's been in spring, he's gonna have a high in home runs. So that's the big thing with him. Obviously, if you're talking about like the next step in terms of like really getting in that like MVP top player in baseball level, he's got to walk more. We talked about that last time. Can't run a four. It's tough to run a 4% walk rate and be an elite offensive player just because, you're usually going to run like a 330 OBP, which is not bad, but it's just average. And the best offensive players at baseball run closer to like a 400 on base percentage. I mean, look at Acuña, look at Betts, look at Freeman, look at Soto. All those guys are, their OBPs are close to 400, if not over 400. And that's tough to do with a 4% walk rate. So if we're talking about that level, to get to that level, he's got to walk more. He's got to get his OBP up. But yeah, absolutely. I mean, I said it last time you and I talked. I think he's on talent. Yeah, I think you can make the case he's the second best player on the team just because he's got endless potential. I mean, he can be a 30-30 guy. He can be a 40-40 guy. The Braves could have two 40-40 guys. I mean, that's how ridiculous this is. So, on talent, absolutely. And it's really good. I hope he gets off to a good start in the season because that's what killed him last year is he got off to that horrendous start. And if he gets off to a good start this year, it'll be very interesting to see where he goes.
Absolutely. Got up to the ring to start, then got hurt, but then came back and finally got going. And, he definitely has taken off in the second half over the past couple of years. And, I know that there are completely different approaches at the plate, completely different types of hitters, but, we saw Matt Olson have a great spring last year. He really took off last year by pulling the ball and, cutting down his strikeout rate. To your point, he definitely has a much better walk potential. But if Michael Harris II can, cut down on that strikeout rate, hit left-handed hitters or left-handed pitching better, pull the ball more, there are some things he's very capable of doing that if he does, it unlocks star potential at the plate. Speaking of unlocking potential, obviously, the headlines, the spotlight for much of this offseason was on one of the earlier moves the Braves made in bringing in Jarred Kelenic. And so far, it's been a slow start for Kelenic. I think you can label it as a disappointing spring. But I do also think that there are, it's a valid reason. Those who are mentioning the fact that, number one, you can see There is a difference in his stance when it comes to where he is now versus even where he was last year. I do think that it's valid that the Braves are working with him on changing up his approach at the plate so that once he does start to experience some success, he can sustain it. And the other thing that I'll point out about Kelenic is, now I've talked about the fact that the Braves have been so good about getting instant production from bringing in veterans elsewhere who were not doing so well. They come into Atlanta and they do better. But the difference between them and Kelenic is those veterans have a reference point earlier in their career where they were successful that they can revert to. Kelenic doesn't have that because he's still a young hitter. And unlike our other young hitters who right now are being so productive, Kelenic hasn't had years in our system. It's going to take a little bit of time, and I think that's important to point out. Yes, it is a bit disappointing to see his start to the spring, but I think that I don't think it's an excuse to mention that the Braves are likely working through, changes in his mechanics. And I think that there's still plenty of reason to keep the faith that once he starts experiencing some success, we'll start to see him really take off when it comes to his offensive production.
Yeah, I mean, this is a situation where, it's spring training, right? Guys are working on stuff. Like, it does matter. It's not completely worthless information. Like, it does matter. These guys want to do well when they're out there against anybody. So I don't want to just completely disregard it, but it's spring training. Like, I don't think, and I think you and I talked about this last time, I don't think there's a scenario where he's like not the starting left fielder. I don't see, I don't think he's competing for a job. Those are the circumstances where spring training stats matter the most, is when you're actively competing for a job, like Bryce Elder, like we talked about. Like, Bryce Elder needed a good start today because Ronaldo Lopez is kind of running away with that competition. And, for Bryce Elder, his spring stats do matter. For Kelenic, I can't imagine he's competing for a job. Like, who's going to play left field if not him? I mean, is it going to be Jordan Luplow? I highly doubt that. So, for him, it matters much less. But I will say this, and I think we, as Braves fans and people who cover the team, we do try to look at it as optimistically as possible. But like, there's a version of this where just Kelenic's not good. Like, you look at his career numbers in Seattle, like, they weren't great, to be honest. I mean, he had one kind of hot stretch at the beginning of last year, and that's really it. He's been pretty terrible outside of that. So, like, there is a version of this move, and all the subsequent moves they made, where Kelenic is just not good, and that could happen. But it's not. It's gonna be based on regular season numbers. It's not gonna be based on anything happened in spring training. So, that is a possibility. Like, maybe we didn't do enough, a good enough job talking about that. But like, there is a reality where he's just not good. At which case, the Braves will figure something else out. But yeah, I'm not too worried about spring training stats. The guys who are competing for jobs, that's kind of where I actually focus any energy on spring training stats. I don't think that's Kelenic. I think Kelenic's got left field locked up, and he's working on stuff like you said. And we'll see. Once the regular season starts, then we can actually start putting some faith in some numbers.
Well, then let's get to, and I agree with you completely. He's going the luxury of the Braves having the offense that they have is that they can take risks that have high rewards in going and investing in a player like Kelenic. So even if he struggles through spring, I still think that he's going to be the main guy in left field, at least, to the start of the season. And if you just get to, late May or June and it's just not working, then you adjust from there. You've got that luxury with the
And
offense that you have. Go ahead.
I do want to add this. My opinion changes drastically if we wake up at some point during spring and they've signed like Adam Duvall. Like, if
Great
they
point.
actually get like a legitimate left fielder in camp at some point, then everything I just said is moot, because then it absolutely does matter how well he hits in spring.
Then let's get to, the left field position, because it's Kelenic. That's going to happen. Kelenic, Michael Harris II, Ronald Acuña Jr., that's your starting outfielder. But there's still bench roles to fill. And there are some intriguing performances going on in spring training when it comes to Forrest Wall. Jordan Luplow had a great at bat. He hit one a mile that went foul, and the very next pitch hit one a mile that was fair. But we've got that fourth outfielder spot. And I know that people, are talking about signing that free agent, but you mentioned this point, and it was a great point last time. You're not really going to have a good chance to sign a free agent that wants to play, because in Atlanta, they're not going to play. They're just not going to play that much if they're a bench player. But when it comes to a Forrest Wall, when it comes to a Jordan Luplow and Eli White, those are players who are in who know they're bench players. They know that they're probably not going to play that much, but they're fine because that's their role. What are you looking at when it comes to the performances of those players, and how would you approach that fourth outfield spot? One spot that, may not necessarily play that much, but, still is pretty vital, especially if you were to have an unexpected injury like we, had that scare with earlier in the spring with Ronald.
Yeah, so when you're talking about the bench, and whether you're talking about if you're talking about the outfield, then you have to start with the center field. And if you're talking about the infield, you have to start with shortstop, right? Because those are the two positions that require a special type of player to cover. Like, not just anybody can play center field, and not just anybody can play shortstop. So when you're talking about your backups for those spots, those are the places you start. So with the outfield, you have to have a backup center fielder in case Michael gets hurt in the fifth inning of a game. You got to have somebody who could cover the last four innings. Obviously, after the game's over, you can make a roster move, but you got to have somebody that can cover the last four innings. The good news for the Braves is that Kelnick and Acuna could probably play four innings of center field and you'd be fine. So that flexibility allows them to be, much more open to who gets those bench jobs. They don't have to have a center fielder necessarily on the bench. Like, if neither Kelnick or Ronald could cover center field for five innings, then guys like Eli White and Forrest Wall make more sense because you need a center fielder on your bench. Because Kelnick and Acuna can play center field, a guy like Luplow probably, as I'm sitting here today, probably makes the most sense. I think you need a right-hander because, again, Kelnick and Michael are left-handed. If you're going in the Marlins series and Kelnick is 0 for his last 15 and they're starting, Jesus Luzardo is a left-handed pitcher, that's a perfect opportunity to get Jordan Luplow some at-bats. But if you got Forrest Wall sitting over there, well, you're not going to put a left-handed guy on the bench in that scenario. Like, there's not really a scenario where a left-handed guy is going to get an opportunity to play where a right-handed guy will. Like, there are situations where there's a really tough lefty. Maybe it's the ninth inning, eighth inning of a Phillies game, and they bring in Alvarado in a big spot, and you want Luplow instead of Kelnick. That's a real scenario that could happen. So I think right-handed makes sense. I think Luplow has had a pretty good career against left-handed pitching, and I'm talking about like a major league career, and that's just something that Forrest Wall and Eli White don't really have in their resume. They don't have major league success against a certain platoon side. So, Eli White makes some sense. I think it should be a right-handed player, but because you don't have to worry about center field, or at least the Braves don't have to worry about center field outside of Michael, I think Luplow, as we sit here today with the current collection of guys, I think Luplow makes the most sense for all the things you have to consider for that spot.
And then to your point, we talk about the fact, listen, if the infield, you obviously have Riley, you have Ozzie Albies, you have Matt Olson. Having a guy, though, if you were to just need someone to fill in for a few innings in case one of those guys get injured, you've got David Fletcher, you've got Luis Guillerme, you've got, those options, a couple of younger options as well. But the thing that also stands out to me is that, you've got Orlando Arcia at shortstop, who you're likely going to continue to play. But say Orlando Arcia starts the season off, cold, and you've got both Jared Kelnick and Orlando Arcia not having the best of the starts to the season. How does that scenario, potentially impact what you would do on the bench when it comes to a guy who could play that shortstop position as the backup and also have a little bit of versatility to play other infield positions?
Yeah, I mean, David Fletcher has played, he played a decent amount of shortstop with Los Angeles. Guillorme has played a little bit of shortstop. He's definitely much more of a second base, third base guy. Luke Williams has played quite a bit of shortstop. So you could go with either one of those guys, probably. Now, I will say this, Guillorme signed a major league deal, whereas David Fletcher was traded for on a major league deal, but then they DF, or not DFA'd him, but they sent him through waivers and took him off the 40 man. And so he can be optioned to the minors. So that stuff matters. Contract matters. Options matter when we're talking about the opening day roster. With Arcia, and let I think he would have to really start struggling on defense for it to matter in terms of his playing time. I think the Braves, especially with shortstop, it's just catch the ball. Like anything you get on offense is a plus, especially with the lineup that he has around him. Now, if Arcia has started kicking the ball around at short, if his range really left him, then that's a different conversation. But, and again, if you have an injury in the middle of the game, like David Fletcher, Luke Williams can cover 5 innings of shortstop. You're not gonna, it's not gonna, it might not be great, but it's not gonna kill you. And then you can make a move if you need to. So any of those guys, I don't know if they're terribly comfortable with Guillorme at shortstop just because it's been a long time since he's played it. He's older, you know, he's kind of heavier. He's not really a body for short. I would imagine either Fletcher, again, with the current group that's out there, I imagine either Fletcher or Luke Williams will be on the team in some capacity as the backup shortstop. And, you know, if something happened to RC in the middle of a game.
Well, then, so we've talked about the outfield depth. We talked about the infield depth. I think the starting pitching is pretty well known by now, which focuses on the bullpen. And we've got some, pretty, interesting, intriguing performances that have happened, especially when it comes to veteran Ken Giles, who for the first time in a few years, trying his best to get back into the major league pitcher. Ray Kerr has shown some intriguing opportunities. Tyler Matzek continues, in my opinion, to show improvement, though it's been said that he could, potentially, start off in the minors to work his way back. But I think that you've got your, first five, six, options nailed down in the bullpen. Iglesias, Minter, Pierce Johnson, Joe Jimenez, Aaron Bummer, so on. But when you look at the, those last few spots, and you've got a Giles, a Kerr, a Matzek, things such as that. Now we're talking about roster construction here, Steven. Options obviously matter. What do you think they'll possibly do when it comes to shuffling around their options for the bullpen, and who could really be a surprise addition to the opening day roster that many may not consider an option right now?
Well, my favorite, like, out of completely out of left field scenario currently is, and again, this is highly unlikely to happen. Like, there's been no indications that this would happen. But if we're just talking like pie in the sky, crazy scenario we don't see coming, my favorite one is currently to put AJ Smith-Shawver in the rotation as the fifth starter and then put Ronaldo in the bullpen. And that bullpen just becomes. Like it's already nasty, but you put Ronaldo in that bullpen as like the swing man, high leverage, can pitch multiple innings on top of all the other guys. Like that's just nasty. Like that's an unbelievable bullpen. And I don't think, you know, if I'm being honest, I don't think AJ is that big of a drop off from Ronaldo in terms of being a starter. But again, that's they've shown absolutely no indication that that's going to happen. So I wouldn't put any money on that in any way. Just. You know, a fun scenario that maybe nobody's talking about is that one. But to answer your first question, my guess is Ronaldo's going to be the fifth starter. Like you said, there's five or six locks. You know, you got Iglesias, you got Minter, you got Bummer, you got Johnson, and you've got Jimenez. So that's five locks. I think Ken Giles, as long as he's healthy, I think the fact that they already optioned Daysbell Hernandez. Was kind of the other right-hander competing for that spot. I think that means Ken Giles is going to be on the team unless he's hurt. So, you know, you could probably put Ken Giles in there already. And then it's going to come down to, you know, Tyler Matzek, Ray Kerr, Dylan Lee for that other left-handed spot. Obviously, they've already got, they've got Minter, they've got Bummer as left-handers in the bullpen. They're probably going to want a third. So, you know, you could probably group Matzek, Lee, and Kerr all together and say, they're going to take one of those. I guess they could take two. I guess that's not out of the question. Dylan Lee has options, so that helps a lot. I think Ray Kerr has an option too, so that would also help. So they could take two of those guys. And then, you know, Jackson Stevens is probably the eighth guy in the bullpen as we sit here today. But again, they could take two of those lefties. You know, they could maybe do something else. They could pick somebody up late. Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see. I think most of the bullpen is pretty set. It's just going to be those last couple of spots. A lot of it's going to come down to how Tyler Matzek looks. You know, Chris and I were talking about this today. You know, they talked early on about having him start on the IL, but he's already made three appearances this spring. And for a reliever, that's a lot this early. And it doesn't take long for a reliever to get ready for a season. So I'm not actually sure. they're going to have to put him on the IL to start the season. Like if he's pitching, if he keeps pitching at the rate he's been pitching, he's going to throw as much as anybody this spring, which means he would probably be ready for the season. And his velocity good. So that's a big question mark. I think if he's healthy, that he's probably going to be on the team. I think he's either going to be on the team or on the IL, I guess is the best way to say it. So, that would be my guess for now. I think they'll go with the five guys that are locks already, and then they'll add Ken Giles, Tyler Matzek, and probably Jackson Stevens.
Now, Steven, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but us as Braves fans, we have been blessed over the past few years when it comes to that bullpen swing man. We've been blessed to see the heroic efforts of a Josh Tomlin, a Jackson Stevens, and a Michael Tonkin. Are you given the hot take that you think Ronaldo Lopez could be better than any of those in previous years? Is that what I'm hearing you say?
Ronaldo Lopez is a better reliever than any of those guys. A thousand. That's, you can put those words in my mouth. That's exactly what I'm saying.
You heard it here first, folks. The hot take. I'm just kidding. Steven is absolutely correct. I just had to throw that in there. Hey, they've stepped up in big spots for us, and I know that you own a Josh Tomlin jersey. Would I be correct in assuming that, Steven?
I don't own a Josh Tomlin, but I do have a Jesse Chavez.
There you
So
go.
same vintage.
Probably even better. As revered as Jesse is, we won't go into those waters. So, but Stephen, before the show, we talked about the fact that roster construction is kind of where you are focused right now, and it should be, to kind of finalize this roster heading into the season. And I think that it is an out of the box approach if you were to put AJ Smith-Shawver in that fifth spot, Ronaldo Lopez in the bullpen. But I think it's a great approach because it gives you the opportunity to kind of manage the innings, but also use those pitchers as you most effectively can at the major league level. But any more thoughts on roster construction? We talked about outfield depth, talked about the bench, infield depth, and the bullpen. Any more thoughts to roster construction as of right now when it comes to where the Braves may be in a few weeks?
Well, everybody has that one bench spot that no one ever uses, right? Like you're going to have the DH on the bench. You're going to have the backup catcher on the bench. Everybody knows who those guys are for the Braves. It's going to be Darno. It's going to be Ozuna. Then you have your infielder and your outfielder. We already talked about that. But then you have that last bench spot. And what are the Braves going to do with that? Are they going to do two infielders? Are they going to do two outfielders? I don't think they would do three catchers. I guess they could, but I haven't seen or read or heard any indication that they're even considering that. So it's probably going to be two infielders or two outfielders. So yeah, that's, there's some different strategical ideas behind each of them and different things you can do. Do you put a speed guy on there for pinch running opportunities? Snit's not terribly aggressive with that stuff, at least in the regular season. So I don't know how much that would actually get used, but that's a real conversation to have. But other than that, I mean, yeah, you're talking about the last few bullpen spots. There's some right left combinations that make more sense than others. Again, if I was the Braves, if I was king of the world, I would kick around the idea of starting the season with AJ in the rotation and Ronaldo in the bullpen. Even if you say that AJ is a step down from Ronaldo in the rotation, being able to add Ronaldo to the bullpen versus like a Jackson Stevens is such a big increase in talent that even if the starting spot was a slight decrease, I think you're still coming out ahead in terms of overall talent distribution. So that's kind of my idea behind that. But yeah, I mean, that's, again, that's pie in the sky. That's just me making stuff up in my head just for fun. But yeah, I don't really have anything else. This team was already so set coming into the year as long as everybody's healthy, and that's the caveat, right? Like all this changes tomorrow if we wake up to a new injury, and then we start all this all over again. So keep everybody healthy, and it's a pretty simple roster to put together, honestly.
Absolutely. So, Stephen, let's, as we wrap up this edition of the podcast, Stephen Nabletter, let's take a, kind of an unorthodox, fun tour around the NL East, because at different levels of significance, there's been some news about each of the NL East teams that, are not necessarily directly relevant to the Braves, but still, do have relevance, obviously, to their success. And we'll start off with the big one that actually happened. Earlier this week, it was announced that after agreeing, earlier in the offseason, when the Braves had interest in Aaron Nola, Phillies re-signed him for 7 years, $175 million. Zach Wheeler was set to be a free agent after this year. You could have seen the Braves have interest in him, but instead, he agreed to a 3-year, $126 million deal, the latest pitcher who's going to be making 40 plus million. So he's in Philadelphia for another 4 years. Steven, probably not a pitcher in baseball the Braves are more familiar with than Zach Wheeler. Your thoughts on, him being, on a loaded NL East rival for years to come, and one that obviously we want to get past when it comes to our pursuit of a World Series.
Yeah, I mean that's the I mean the Phillies' entire they're in their entire strategy is Wheeler, Nola, and Harper, basically. Like they built their team around those three guys. The thing that stands out to me about the Wheeler and Nola deals is that, and I've said this before, but I don't think people fully grasp the concept. When you sign a free agent pitcher or you're signing a pitcher over 30, durability matters more than basically anything. And if you look at Aaron Nola and you look at Zach Wheeler, they have been just absolute workhorses for basically their entire career. And they don't miss starts and they're always available. They are always throwing every fifth day. They're always ready in October. And for teams that are signing, 32, 33, 34-year-old pitchers, that's what they care about. And there's a reason those guys sign those massive contracts and guys like Blake Snell are still unsigned. And it's not hard to figure out. And, this is going to be kind of the Max Fried problem if, when he gets to free agency, unless he has another, if he puts together 30 starts this year, it's going to help a lot. But if he has another injury year like he had last year, he's going to run into the same problem. Free agent pitchers get the contracts they get because of their durability, and they don't get the contracts they don't get because they don't have durability. And, it's an underrated part of being a free agent pitcher, and Wheeler and Nola are arguably two of the best. I mean, they're just absolute workhorses, and they got paid a ton of money because of it.
Well, then I'll ask this real quickly because, of course, you do have the wild cards that are still out there in Blake Snell and Jordan Montgomery. And to your point, I agree with you completely. The durability of both Montgomery and a Snell is not to the level of a Nola or a Wheeler. But we've heard some rumors, that the Phillies could, really kind of go after it over the next few years, with the lineup that they have and, some of their, best players still, in the late portions of their prime. Do you put stock into the Phillies potentially being a landing spot for a Blake Snell or a Jordan Montgomery on a kind of, 1 to 2 year deal before they opt out type situation? I could see it happening, but want to get your thoughts on that possibility.
Absolutely. I would sign Blake Snell on a 1 or 2 year deal. I mean, you've mitigated most of the risk, right? Like a 1 year contract can only be so bad. And, the reward at that point outweighs the risk. So 100%, if I was the Phillies and I had an older team who, I probably only got a couple more years of actually going hard after this thing, still trying to get that World Series title. That's exactly what I do. I'd sign Jordan Montgomery or Blake Snell. If I was the Giants, I'd do it. There's a bunch of teams. I mean, on a 1 or 2 year deal, most teams should be interested in Blake Snell, quite honestly. The Red Sox just got some brutal news with Giolito. I don't really understand why they're not in on these guys. I don't know why at some point the Red Sox started acting like the Pirates in terms of their roster. I don't really understand what happened to that organization, but like they should be all in on Blake Snell at this point. There's a bunch of, I mean, especially, with him coming out and saying he's up for a shorter deal, a Bellinger type deal with opt outs. Every team in baseball, to some extent, with one or two exceptions, should be in on that because you've mitigated most of your risk and now you're just dealing with the reward. And, we get so busy talking about risk, we do forget that like the reward with Blake Snell is actually pretty high. Like if he hits, like he's an extremely talented guy. Like he could absolutely help you win in October. I mean, he's got a Cy Young. He took the Rays to the World Series a few years ago. Like he's a talented guy. And if you're getting him on a 1 or 2 year deal, then you've done your job as a GM and now you can just let him go pitch.
100%. Now, shifting gears to the New York Mets, we obviously heard, saw the news on Cody Senga. They're a starting pitcher from Japan who's dealing with some ailments. They are getting Edwin Diaz back. But the big talk from the Mets obviously has been focused on the fact, that Pete Alonso is going into the last year of his deal and he doesn't currently have an extension. But there's also been talk of them definitely going after Juan Soto, who's not even the Met, and is it on the other New York team, but what are your thoughts about the Mets? We had, you know, we hear what were these hypotheticals, but do you feel that the Mets are just in for another year where, you know, they definitely don't have the expectations that they had, but do you see anything about the Mets that, you know, is a significant positive right now, or is there a reason why we're talking about Juan Soto? Because there's just not much there for them to look forward to this year.
Yeah, they're bad. They're gonna be bad. You know, if I was the Mets, I wouldn't sign Pete Alonso to a long-term deal either. I think the kind of he, I think he's gonna want like, you know, $30, $35 million a year. I think he's gonna want like middle of the order type money. And the problem is he's a first baseman with very little value outside of the bat, and you know, unless you're hitting like Freddie Freeman or Matt Olson, it's very hard to make that profile work in terms of a ton of value. Like Pete Alonso is basically a perennial like 3-win player. Like, do I want to pay that guy $30 million a year to play first base and you know, and into his age, you know, into his 30s, where he's probably going to be closer to like a 2-win player? No, I don't. I have no interest in that. I will gladly let somebody else foot that bill. So I agree with the Met. You know, they've got David Stearns running that play. I mean, David Stearns is a super smart guy. So, you know, gone are the days of the Mets doing really incredibly stupid stuff. I just think they don't have a lot of talent, and Kodai Senga going down hurts a lot. They don't really seem very interested in doing much to help the 2024 team. I think they'll never say this, but I think they've pretty much punted 2024 at this point. If they get hot and, you know, maybe grab a wild card, the bar for grabbing a wild card has never been lower, obviously, because of expanded playoffs. So that, I mean, it could happen. The Marlins weren't a good team last year and they got a playoff spot just because they got hot with one run game. So anything could happen, but no, the Mets are not good. They're not a, they don't have enough talent to seriously contend for anything.
Of course, the other big news that occurred when it came to, you know, former Braves earlier this week, Stephen, is the fact that, you know, Eddie Rosario signed a split contract. I saw it reported as a split contract, saw it reported and as a minor league deal, but basically it's a deal to where, yes, he's a national in spring training, and if he makes the roster, he can make up to $4 million. First, just, you know, with the success that he's had over the past few years with the Braves, it's kind of eye-opening that that's the type of contract he had to settle for. So I'll get your thoughts on that. But I also want to say this. I think that it is almost a guarantee. If you were to ask Braves fans, what is the one thing that they could guarantee from an opposing hitter this year with the most confidence? It's that, as some of others have said, at some point in time, Eddie Rosario is going to walk us off in either at Truist Park or in Washington. It just feels like it's going to happen. But all joking aside, good to see Eddie Rosario, you know, has an opportunity to play, but for a team that's not looking to compete, to have that cheap of a contract on a one-year deal, that was pretty eye-opening. Even though he's a streaky hitter, definitely wasn't last year where he was in the 21 playoffs, obviously. It's still kind of eye-opening with the type of hitter that he can be. He had to settle for that type of deal.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of outfielders on the market right now that are kind of scratching their head about the kind of deals they've gotten. I think that's why there's still so many outfielders on the market. You know, the Nationals are an interesting fit for Eddie. You know, they've got Lane Adams, who plays left field for them, who's a pretty good player, actually. And they've also got Victor Robles in outfield. They've got two really young, talented guys in Dylan Cruz and James Woods, who are both tremendous prospects who I thought might actually get up there, and they still might. I mean, Eddie's probably going to be a bench player, if we're being honest. So yeah, I don't know how much Eddie's actually going to play. I am surprised that he didn't get a guarantee. You know, he didn't. He has to make the team to even get any of that money. I mean, you know, he if he's if he doesn't make the team, then it's a much much lower contract. So, you know, that's kind of the new world order for older veteran players. It's just tough to get these contracts like, you know, the way they could maybe 5 or 6 years ago. And, you know, that's a whole separate podcast on why that is. But yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if they grabbed Eddie just with the idea of trading him, you know, at the trade deadline. Washington's not going to be very good. And again, they've got some young outfielders that I'm sure they'd rather give those at bats to, but yeah, good for Eddie. I mean, obviously the Braves fans will always love Eddie. You know, he had some big hits obviously in 2021 to win a World Series. He had some big hits even last year. I mean, I remember, you know, he hit that grand slam in Arizona in the ninth inning to the Braves were losing. Then he hit a go-ahead grand slam, and that really kind of kicked off a pretty long winning streak for them. So I'll always love Eddie Rosario. Braves fans will always love him. You're absolutely right. He's going to hit a walk-off home run at some point against, somebody in a Braves uniform. That's almost a guarantee. But yeah, I'm a little surprised he didn't do better on the open market.
Well, then, the most exciting news of all, Stephen, and I know that you've been waiting the full podcast for us to get to this point. I don't know if you saw the news today or not, but the Marlins have actually announced that they are going to be allowing flags, drums, and musical instruments into their park this year for baseball games. So, Stephen Tolbert, I don't know how musically inclined you are, but I know that you're a big baseball fan. What better scenario could you think of than being able to fine-tune your musical abilities while also watching baseball at the same time? If you wanted to do that, you could do it while watching Marlins baseball. I think it's news that could change the sport, being sarcastic.
Yeah. I mean, I think if I was watching a Marlins game, I would probably be hoping there was some sort of musical talent somewhere around me that I could probably pay attention to, because I
That's
don't
a
know
good
how
point.
I don't I've been low, you know, I've probably been the low man on the Marlins for the last 2 years. I don't know how they did what they did last. I mean, I know how they did it. They never lost a one run game, but on just talent level, that was not a good team, and they're still not a good team. And they need to lock up Luis Arraez. I don't know if they will. If they let him go, then they're it's just more of the same. But yeah, if I were them, I would probably let musical talent in the stadium as well, because that might be the most interesting thing to watch.
I will give credit where credit is due, though, and this is because I respect you so much when it comes to a baseball mind. I will give you credit. Last year, one of the things that you said you've done it 2 years in a row, actually, or actually, I think you did it twice last year. You said early in the season when we did a podcast together that the Marlins could surprise some teams, could surprise some people, and make the playoffs. That's exactly what they did. And then when we did a podcast during the All-Star break last year, you also said, I asked you which team in the National League, besides the Dodgers, scares you the most. You said the Phillies, even though the Phillies didn't look like at that point they were going to clearly be in the playoffs. Lo and behold, look what happened. So I'll give you credit where credit's due. You made a call on the Marlins last year. It did work out. But I certainly agree with you. Once they got there, many didn't think that they were going to do anything, and they certainly haven't done anything to build off that momentum this year. So overall, just wanted to take a tour around the NL East. Again, Phillies right now seem to be, the biggest competition for the Braves, obviously, with what's occurred over the past few years in the playoffs. But it'll be great to see the Braves hopefully get that seventh NL East title. Steven, this has been a lot of fun. I know that I threw a couple of curveballs at you, but hey, you knocked them out of the park like always. Anything else you want to end the podcast with? Been another great conversation with you.
No, we got, obviously we got a ton going on the site. We got the podcast network really up and running. Chris has been getting some final stuff out of the way for, before the season starts, but he's going to be back next week, and I think we're just going to be on a pretty consistent schedule. Scott and Brad are back and are going to start, every Sunday with their show. Obviously, Sean has his show 3 or 4 times a week. The site itself, ton of written content. We're doing our around the league season previews. We're about halfway done with those. There's still some position battles, in camp. Obviously, Acuña is going to get ramped back up. So there's just going to be a ton. This is one of my favorite times of year, honestly, the beginning of baseball. We got March Madness coming up. This is a tremendous time for the sports calendar. But yeah, we appreciate all the fans. We appreciate all the support. You guys support us at an incredible level, quite honestly. And we do appreciate it. And Sean, I do want to give you a shout out. Thank you for once again pitch hitting for our fearless leader, Chris Willis. We do appreciate you jumping on and being part of the podcast to be named later.
Hey, always a pleasure again. I will always jump at the opportunity to discuss baseball with not only fellow Braves fans, but some of the best minds when it comes to Braves baseball. And Steven, you mentioned March Madness. You do have Tennessee jotted down to win the SEC tournament and obviously to win it all in March Madness, right?
You know what? I thought about, obviously people that don't know, Sean is a big Tennessee fan. He lives in Tennessee, and I'm going to be honest with you. I'm going to be 100% honest. I think Tennessee is the best team in the country. I really do. I think Tennessee is the best team in the country. I really want to pick them to go deep in a tournament. But like
You can't trust it.
I
You
can't,
can't trust
like Rick, like putting a Rick Barnes team like deep into the tournament has burned me so many times, like more times than I can count. Like between him and Purdue, I have been burned more times than maybe any other, two coaches or teams. So I don't know what I'm gonna do because I really do think Tennessee went into Alabama and won, which is incredibly tough to do. Tennessee is a great team, and if I was picking it, I think I would pick them to win it all, but I have to like close my eyes to do it because
Well,
Rick Barnes has burned me more than once.
and it's funny that you mentioned that. You mentioned Purdue and Tennessee. The best chance that we had a few years ago with Grant Williams and Admiral Schofield, it was Purdue that beat us on a call that was very questionable. But you know, we talk about the Final Four, Stephen. I call it the Frozen Four that always gets Tennessee. It's a 4+ minute run in the tournament game that we lose that we just completely can't do anything on
Yeah.
offense. But now having Dalton connect to typically help us out. And I know that many listening to this show are probably, fans across the South, but mainly Georgia fans. Listen, when it comes to football, as a Tennessee fan, I'll be the first to admit Georgia is the cream of the crop right now. So forgive the little bit of the Vols talk, but wanted to get Stephen's opinion on that. But hey, we'll get back to the reason why we're here. Braves baseball, obviously a few more weeks of coverage when it comes to spring training. Then we're going to get started and get going. And as Stephen said, we're going to have you fully covered here when it comes to the Battery Power Podcast Network. Make sure you check out all the great content at batterypower.com, at batterypowersbn, and wherever you get your podcast for free. That's where we'll be. Just hit that subscribe button and you'll get the content when it's available. For Stephen Tolbert at B_Outliers on X/Twitter, my name's Sean Coleman at StatsSAC. Until next time, go Braves. We'll talk to you again soon here on the Battery Power Podcast Network.